This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. For more than 20 years, she taught poetry at San Francisco State University. She published a few poems and a textbook on poetry. And then one day, her life took a dramatic turn. Frances Mays found a publisher for her memoir, Under the Tuscan Sun. That book remained on the New York Times bestseller list for more than 2.5 years and became a movie starring Diane Lane as the protagonist who chucks it all late in life for a chance to start over in a most romantic setting.
I have bought a house in a foreign country. There's a little fixing up to do.
I never realized you were so handy.
I'm in Italy. I can hire the muscular descendants of Roman gods.
That's a clip from the movie Under the Tuscan Sun. That starred Diane Lane. Well, joining us now is the author who inspired that and a movement, Frances Mays. Welcome, Frances. Good to have you here.
Buongiorno, Frank.
Buongiorno, as they say in your other home, but when you're not in Italy, you're in Hillsborough.
Yes, very much at home in Hillsborough. We love it.
Well, tell us a little bit about, we should actually, I'm going to take you back a little bit because I want to talk a little bit about the transition from your work as a teacher and a poet at San Francisco State and, you know, what it was like for you to then experience Under the Tuscan Sun and have the success of that book.
It was a shock to the system. I rented a farmhouse in Tuscany, just kind of put my finger down on the map and said, this is a good location. And after 2 weeks in the place, I knew that I really wanted to have that as part of my life. And it was 5 years later that I finally bought the house and started changing over to writing prose from writing poetry. It just happened like spontaneous combustion. I started not being able to break the lines, and notebooks kept filling up. And it was just out of excitement with being there. It was kind of a spontaneous journey into prose.
Were you trying to write poetry that turned into prose? That's the way it sounded.
Yes, yes. And it just wasn't working anymore.
In one moment, that might have been a little troublesome, right?
It was scary. I thought, I'm going to be a prose writer after all. And it's exactly what I turned out to be. I've never really looked back. Mm. I don't even know how to write a poem anymore.
What people love about your books, and of course you are a travel writer as well, in addition to the messages and these themes of renewal and rebirth, is the place and the impact of the place on all of us, right?
Yes. Well, I grew up in Georgia reading all the great Southern writers, so that sense of place as part of writing is really just part of my natural makeup. And it started out very early in Tuscany. I wanted to know, what was it about that landscape that made the Tuscans the way they were and are? And so that natural connection I have with the land has been major theme in all my writing.
But it was more than that, it seems to me. It's what made them who they are. But what made you turn from a poet to a prose writer? The place was turning you into a different
Yes. I always think where you are is who you are. And these things are all mysteriously connected.
Well, tell us about this new book now. Women in Sunlight is your latest novel, and that's the book that's out just now, right?
Yesterday was the pub day. It was very exciting.
Women in Sunlight. This is a novel, not a memoir.
This is a novel. It's my second novel. My first one took place in South Georgia, where I grew up. But this one is about three North Carolina-based women who are getting the not-so-subtle message that it's time to downsize, declutter, retire. They're getting older, and they're feeling that their options are kind of narrowing down. And so they meet at an orientation meeting for an active lifestyle over 55 retirement community where everything is fun and planned, and it just doesn't quite suit them. They find themselves becoming very good friends over the course of a summer. And that first part of the novel takes place in North Carolina. And they do this bold, crazy thing and lease a house for a year in Tuscany. But at the end of the book, do they stay there or do they come home? It's not clear to them all the way through which is going to happen. But it's about friendship. It's about at a time in your life when a lot of things are narrowing down and you're seeing a lot of endings, It's about new beginnings and that they are still possible later in life.
This is a great image and a great metaphor, that idea that as we grow older, we are encouraged, if not by our own sense of aesthetics, then by our children, to get rid of some of this stuff.
Yes.
So the paring down and the narrowing is a marker.
You start feeling like you're supposed to clear out.
That's right. So get rid of your junk and, you know, don't let the door. So, but the shrinkage, the fact that things are less, and that's what that has to be, that they go hand in hand. And this is something that these women reject at some point.
Yes, they do. They opt for more. Each of them, each of the three, becomes the person she intended to be before life waylaid her. So it's not only that they have a great time traveling and running around in Tuscany and meeting friends and learning the language and all that, but they get to kind of their core selves again, and it's a time of liberation and freedom and development and all those good things. It's just a time that they seize for themselves.
Well, and it also indicates something else about place. There is what the particular place can do for you. There's the way the sun breaks against the trees at that time of year and the air. But also the fact that you're not in the old place, that you're somewhere else and have the freedom to be who you never imagined you could be.
Yes. And a lot of people go to Italy seeking something like that. And I think one of the reasons is that Italy is so beautiful. It's not only rich and complex and just amazing food and wine and all that. It's that art is natural in Italy. You breathe it. It's not something separate from your life. And I think that gives you permission to be your most creative self.
What's the admixture, though, of some kind of mystical thing coming from the earth over which you have no control? And then that stuff we do in our head if we have a romantic vision of Italy and bring that with us and try to make that happen, right? I mean, there's some of that.
There's a mysterious kind of crux, and I think it's that it's not exactly that Italy is what does this opening and inspiring for you, but it's almost as if when you're ready for that to happen to yourself, you go to Italy, or you go to France or Mexico.
But that suggests you had this impression of the place.
Yes, yeah. Wherever you find this kind of complement to your metabolic state, that you feel that you would be at home there. When my husband first went to Rome, he got off the bus and said, I'm home. Ah. I think sometimes you just get that sense about a place, and it's good not to deny that, because it's something very important.
Yeah, and it can happen in the most. I mean, that happened to me when I moved to Durham. I couldn't believe, because I didn't think a southern town necessarily would. I didn't have anything against a southern town, but I didn't really feel like this was going to be the place. And it was just obvious to me. You know? And so to that extent, I didn't bring a prejudice with me that I tried to live out, which I think sometimes you might do in a place like Italy. You think, well, this will be romantic, and I'll just go and live a romantic life. I think I'll get me a beret and move to Paris or something.
Well, believe me, many people come there to live, and after that first cold winter in a stone house, and after they find out the past remote is not that easy to learn, and they don't last.
Well, and after reading your memoir, you know, there's a lot of hard work to get in that estate all fixed up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I've also read about your effect on that part of Tuscany, the effect of your memoir. You know, people are now moving in because they think, here we go.
Yes, they do.
You spend part of your time there. You still live in Italy.
Yes, we're there about half the year. Yeah. I've been writing a travel book for the past 14 months, so we've been there a lot. And it's on little-known places in Italy. Yeah. So we've been exploring the just out-of-the-way places and traveling quite without motive, and that's been so much fun. It's just reaffirmed my excitement about Italy. This little country the size of Arizona has so much variety, so much packed into it.
Well, you talked about the art. I mean, this is a place that's about the site of your memoir, 65 miles from Florence, which is the capital of that part of Italy. Do you get there often? Do you spend time?
Oh, we love Florence. Yeah. We take the train. It's so easy. We love the Italian trains. There's so many fast ones now. It's just easy to get around.
So the Women in Sunlight, how long has this been rattling about? I mean, the idea of this and the fact that it's a novel. When did this idea, the germ, begin to germinate?
I think just about 2 years ago, when it came out of a very specific thing. I walk into town every morning for coffee, and often in the piazza, I see a woman writing in her notebook or sketching, and I know why she's there. She's looking for something. She has a reason that's very important to her personal life. And I've met a lot of those women. I've been that woman. And so I really thought that that was a great inspiration, all these women that I've met who are on a quest to do something to deepen their experience.
I'm talking to Frances Mays, whose new novel is called Women in Sunlight. You were that woman in many ways. We didn't talk too much about those days in San Francisco State. You're writing poetry. And in many ways, the story that you're telling here in Women in Sunlight is about this renewal later in life. You get your start in, 50 years old? Was that when it was published? Up until then, what were you thinking about yourself and your career before that book was published?
I was living in San Francisco very happily. Loved San Francisco. And I loved my job. It was only when I started writing prose, which takes so much time and so much focus, that my job began to seem like I can't do both. Mm. I was writing in the, stuffing it in the cracks, summer vacation. And so I quit my job. I tenured job in the Bay Area. Everybody thought I was crazy, but I quit, and I've never regretted. I love being a full-time writer. And my husband Ed's a poet, so we're very portable with our books and papers, and we can be anywhere and do our work. So it's been just huge, great experience. I love living in two cultures. You see one from the perspective of the other, and you don't get as despairing about one or the other. So,
we talked about growing up in Georgia, and you chose Hillsboro as the place you're living half the year. Why Hillsboro?
I was working, when I was in San Francisco, I was working a lot in High Point. I had a line of furniture with Drexel Heritage, and I had ceramics with Vietri, and I was doing all these things after Under the Tuscan Sun came out. So I was coming down here a lot, and my best friends, Ann and Walter Dellinger, lived in Chapel Hill. I came here all the time, but Frances Gravely, who I worked with at Vietri, said, if you want to move back to the South, which you've told me you want to do, you should live in Hillsboro. There's so many writers there.
Mm-hmm.
So we went there and we really liked it.
What was it about the South that you made that you thought you'd want to return
to? Oh, I grew up in Georgia, so I'm just Southerner. I can't help it. You know, even in San Francisco, I always thought, someday I'll get back to the South.
You talked about those other businesses, a ceramics business, olive oil, I think.
Olive oil we have, because we have 700 trees in Italy, and we pick our olives and take them to the mill, and it's just wonderful to have that transforming elixir in your kitchen. It's the best thing to have really great olive oil.
Do you find yourself doing a lot of compare and contrast when you go to Italy or you come back to Hillsboro? What things are surprisingly similar about Hillsboro, North Carolina, and Tuscany, and what's things that are obviously different?
It's hot in the summer. it's rural. There are a lot of similarities. The watermelon's great. You know, a lot of things I love, but basically the cultures are so different, and I really enjoy that.
You would think that here, especially in the American South, the idea of hospitality, which is what I associate with anything, you know, sort of Western European, is probably one of the things that you'd find in common. But apart from that,
yes, that's true. The long, full table laden with food; those are very similar. And I felt that when I first went to Italy, that sense of hospitality, and the stranger is always welcome at the table if the person comes with a friend, and you just throw on another handful of pasta and pull up a chair, and that's very Southern, too.
Yeah, another handful of greens.
Yes.
That's the only thing that changes. You Have you thought about what it means to you to have fame come to you later in life, or what it might have meant had it come earlier?
I never expected any fame because I was a poet, and that isn't going to happen. It's right. Louise Bogan said being a successful poet is like being a successful mushroom. But I love poetry the best, and it's still a huge part of my life. But when I published Under the Tuscan Sun, the publisher thought it would sell like my poetry. That is, not at all. Mm. And when the book kind of strangely took off, he called me and he said, "Frances, this book is really selling. We think it's because of the cover." I said, "Oh, okay."
What was the cover at the time?
The cover was really pretty.
Yeah. What do you think accounts for that? The success of that book?
The writing.
Yeah.
I hope. I mean, that's what a writer hopes
but
for.
It grabbed people in a certain way. There was something about it.
It's Italy. It's at a time when a lot of women were looking for the next step. Yeah. And I guess they're probably just a kind of combination of things.
They will find that combination in your latest book, no doubt, Women in Sunlight. Frances Mays, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Frank.
Frances Mays, the best-selling author of Under the Tuscan Sun, her new book, Women in Sunlight. She's hosting a series of readings and signings and Q&A sessions throughout the state. Going to be at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh tonight at 7, Malaprop's Bookstore in Asheville on Monday, April 9th. And you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.